everybody.
Hello and welcome to the Disney Magic Hour, episode number 121. This week we're walking down Main Street USA and exploring its storied past. Joining me as we take on this new endeavor is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
From just down the mountain is Courtney. Say hello, Courtney.
Hello, Courtney.
From the middle of what I can only assume is a box fort is Pete. Say hello, Pete.
Hello, Pete.
Say hello, Ryan, and say hello, Pogo. This episode of Disney Magic Hour is brought to you by MEI Travel for all your vacation planning needs. For visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, or traveling to a Main Street anywhere around the globe, visit the experts over at meitravel.com, where Becky and her team can get you started on your own vacation adventure. Right now, you're listening to There You Are. You can find this track and more over at soundcloud.com/pogomix. His website is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at Disney Magic Hour Pod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, we are Disney Magic Hour. You can add yourself to the group if you're already in there. You can add your friends. You can listen to this show or share it with your friends from iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher. Melissa, where can everyone find us on Instagram or find out how to support the show?
On Instagram, you can go to Disney Magic Hour Podcast and see our photos there. And if you want to go to patreon.com/Disney Magic Hour, you can find ways to help support the show on there.
All right. So this may sound a little different to everyone tonight. We're going to do this a little differently. We're going to start talking about theme parks a bit more. And on those kind of shows, I'm going to kind of be leading off and kind of taking the reins there. But how is everyone doing tonight?
Good. Tired.
Good.
Long weekend for everyone.
Yeah. Me and Melissa had an active weekend. We have moved a little closer to the kingdom, as it were. And it's been great, but man, it's been four days. Really four very long days. But we are very, very, I'm just happy to be doing this new stuff, man. I'm looking forward. This is cool.
Yeah.
And you had your sister in town this week, Courtney, right?
Yeah, I spent a good 4 days with a couple of 21-year-olds, newly 21-year-olds. So I could use about a week of sleep and a detox. We had a great time.
Good. I know on my end of things, I want to thank everyone for picking up the slack for me last week. We did have a death in the family. And so I've been like here, there, hit, miss, everywhere. I'm like trying to get stuff cobbled together. So I think, yeah, it's mid-January, but we're all due for another break, I think, at some point.
Yeah.
But so this new stuff's kind of going to be like, if you followed the stuff I've done on the Main Street Gazette, it's going to be very similar to that kind of feel, going back, looking at history or people, places, things, all that kind of good stuff. And this week, we kind of let everyone vote on what the group wanted to see. And much to my surprise, everyone really wanted to see early Main Street. So that's something we're going to be diving into in a little bit. But first this week, there was a little bit of news around the FastPass situation going on at the Magic Kingdom. And I know, Pete, you talked about this a little bit last week on the video show.
Yeah. We got into it a little bit. We're doing every other Thursday. We're going to be doing a live video show as long as I'm not like at work on the road, I should say, in that sense. And we got into the new expansion of the FastPass, which... And, you know, I know, Ryan, I know you got it all in front of you, so I'll probably just let you, you know, go along with this. But basically, they're expanding FastPass to a premium paid service, I guess is one way of putting it. Probably the most honest way of putting it is a premium paid service, which you can only imagine is going to be a precursor to the expansion that will come to everyone in a certain sense, because there is sort of an entry fee or a requirement to even have the opportunity to spend more money on the FastPass. So remind me again what that all is. It's a club level. Is that what it is?
Right. So you have to be at club level, and you have to have been there for at least have a 3-day ticket. And then it's $50 per day per person. So, you know, family of four, if you want to do it all 3 days, you're looking at somewhere around $600. But you get three extra FastPasses. And you are able to get special viewing, preferred viewing for some of the nighttime shows. And then you also extended your FastPass window to 90 days out. And this is, you know, it's in pilot phases in club, but it's going to be coming to people. If you have an annual pass, there will be a feature where you can add that on. They haven't put a price point on that yet, but that's, I'm sure, not going to be a cheap thing to add on either. But what does everyone think about this? Melissa, what do you think?
I mean, I'm kind of like, I don't know, that $50 is so high. Like, even if they were going to make for an annual pass, which is what I would want it, you know, I would use it. But like, if it's $50 a day right now, like, I don't even know what they could put that at for an annual pass. And like, it scares me a little bit because I'm already paying a lot for the annual pass. And I feel like it is needed because there is a lot of stuff I can't get a fast pass for now. Like, even Seven Dwarfs is still, you know, 30 days out. I can't get a fast pass right now for it. So, I mean, and forget it. Like, once Toy Story and Star Wars opens up, like, I'll never be able to get anything there. So, I don't know. But the price is definitely scary for me.
Yeah. Courtney, what do you think?
I mean, I don't know that it really, I kind of said this in the group, I'm not sure that it really matters at all to me. I don't get nervous about stuff like this too much because, you know, it's all just in testing. And frankly, for me, like, I get my 3 fast passes and that's usually plenty for me. I can, you know, I always get there at rope drop in the morning. So I'll get a bunch of rides in. I do whatever I didn't get a fast pass for right away. And then I kind of, you know, I know enough to make it work to where I don't have to wait in long lines and I just choose to not do that. So, I mean, if it's that big of a priority for you and you're staying club level already, you have the money to do it, go ahead, but it's not something that would be a draw for me necessarily.
Yeah, and Pete, this kind of reminds me a little bit of like the Max Pass stuff they have out in Disneyland. Did you guys use that when you guys were out in Disneyland last time?
Yeah, we did. We used it every day and it was, it really made the trip, honestly, but also that was at $10 a day per person. And you were able to use it on as many attractions as you wanted to. So if I remember correctly, and you could listen to the recap episode we did of when we did go to Disneyland, I want to say on the first day we used the Max Pass for about like 15 or 16 attractions. Yeah. Okay, so when you work that out, it's like under a dollar per attraction that we used it for. Right now, you're already getting 3 fast passes. So really the deal is that you're getting 3 additionals, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's almost $16.60 for an attraction.
Yeah.
That's not worth, like, there's no day that it's worth. Now, granted, again, if you're coming here for the first time, or you're coming here and you're not going to come here for another 2-3 years, this may be something that entices you, and I'm sure people will buy it. But $16.50 base-ish, you know, base-ish per attraction, that's just silly. That's why I think we all agree that this is a test. You know, this is a test to see, does the system work at least? You know, can we work this? I almost think that $50 is to scare enough people off so they have a low testing ground.
Yeah.
And then as they go forward, they'll open that pool up. And by opening that pool up, you just make it more available financially to other people. And that's when you really find out the barrier.
So you think they will drop the price?
I absolutely do think they will drop the price. I think Disneyland's going to go up. This is going to go down.
I mean, even
because
Disneyland,
$10 for the Disneyland Max Pass is the deal of a century theme park wise.
I would even do Max Pass if it was $20 a day because it is.
That's the sweet spot.
Yeah.
And I think that's a sweet spot for here too.
Yeah.
And I know that's different. Tourist park, you know, theme of what's what I'm looking for?
Locals.
The locals park, yeah.
I know there's a big difference there. And I know that, you know, you can say like crowds are much higher at Disney World when you look at the big picture and this and that. But I think $20 is the sweet spot. And that's where you got to go from. Where I think that changes is annual passes. Where I can see the Max Pass becoming like $1.50 for Disneyland for the year.
But that's almost doubling it. Well, I guess if you double it from 10 to 20, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
That's exactly in line.
That makes sense.
I don't see that being that low for here. I see that number being 300 because there are 4 parks. There are not 2.
When we did the live stream, you started out at 200. Then you went to 250. Now it's at 300.
He's just finding the market. He's finding his,
market. Look, right now, if I said to you, look, all I need is $50 more to make dreams come true. You're going to tell me no?
No, yes.
No, you're not. That's the thing. We can rail and we can cry and we can bitch and we can moan, but we will pay. And they know that, and the market has shown that.
Yeah, to me it reminds me a lot of those, a couple of years ago they had those late nights for people who wanted to come in, and it was a very limited number of spots, and then they were giving away tickets to anyone they could by the end of it, because people were not paying the price point they had for that. So
yeah,
it's, again, it's one of those tests. They're going to figure it out, and whether or not it comes to fruition or not, you know, I know we have friends that, you know, who used to work in the pass holder program, and back then when they worked for Disney, their policy was they will never charge for Fastpass. They weren't going to do the Universal model. And, you know, times change, things change. And I think they'll either find the right price point for this to make it work, or they, you know, it'll be so far outside of the norm that it's not going to have an impact on the typical traveler.
And also, just to point out, you know, Moonlight Magic started at Magic Kingdom. Guess what didn't happen? Decreasing that price. You want to know why? Because people bought them. Because they lowered it. I mean, we're going. We're going next in 2 weeks. We're going to Moonlight Magic, and I happily paid for that number.
It's not called Moonlight Magic. What's that's the DVC.
I'm so sorry. What's it called?
Isn't it just
Midnight Magic?
Midnight Madness with Michael J. Fox.
No, it's not Madness. I think it's it's not that. We'll get there later. That's down. You still have a couple of years for that one.
At this rate, yeah.
I think it'll be really helpful for people. I know a lot of people who came like one time with their families growing up. For people that, I mean, that wasn't me, but for people that know that, like, my kids are 5 and 7, I'm going to take them this one time, they're going to get their picture with Mickey, I think it's perfect for those kind of people. But people that come more frequently like we do, I mean, I'm not going to shell out the extra money for that, for sure.
No, but, you know, I had a couple of people come down here recently, and if I would have told them, hey, you know what, you can get that Flight of Passage, Fast Pass, if you pay $50 for one day at Animal Kingdom. They would have been like, all right, let's do that. You know, I think they would have done that. But again, the fact that you can do it across parks, is that accurate? You can do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's across parks. The piece that I can't understand I haven't gotten clarification on yet is if you can do the same attraction multiple times in a day now. Mm-hmm. Because when you're looking at like an Epcot, you start running into the, okay, I got Soarin', I got, you know, Frozen, I have Test Track. I don't want to really pay for the extras for the other one.
Yeah.
So can you go back and hit another one later in the day?
And also with Epcot and Hollywood Studios, there's still the tier system. So can you now do
Soarin'
and Test Track?
Can you break the tier system?
Yeah.
Because I would be very surprised.
Yeah.
I'd be very surprised.
I would be surprised, but I don't think, especially right now in Hollywood and Epcot, there's enough attractions to...
I'm sorry. Let me rephrase. I think you're right. I think that they'll let you do multiple, like, top one tier or whatever it's called nowadays, but you won't be able to do one ride twice.
Okay.
But I do think that, like, if you wanted to do, you know, like Ryan was saying, if you want to do Test Track, Frozen, and Soarin', I have a feeling you'd be able to do that.
But only if you pay for that.
Yeah, only if you're paying the extra.
Right.
Well, you know what? Eventually, someone's going to pay for this, and we'll not.
I was going to say it opened on last Friday, so we'll start seeing the trickle effect of people coming out and going, I've booked this, I've booked that. Here's how it looks. So we should. I would expect even the next 2 weeks or so, we should hear something from someone somewhere.
Yeah.
And then $350.
Shut your face.
Is going to be where that.
I heard it was going to be $400.
Don't encourage him.
$425 at the most.
I mean, just give
a flat double rate. Just give a flat double rate.
If you ever question, like, and look, it's one of the greatest movies of all time. People will come, Ray. That is the rule of life. If you give people an option, unless they're like un-air conditioned tents in Magic Kingdom, which is just like a terrible idea
in Tomorrowland.
Yeah, like there are certain things that people will be like, huh, but. If it's towards having a premium experience at Disney World, people will come, Ray. People will most definitely come. That's we have proven that. We are the problem. We are the solution to their problem, and we are our own problem. Mm-hmm. So we have no one to blame but themselves, because prices only go up because people don't stop paying. They don't go up when people cease paying for things. That's not how it works.
Right.
You know, So we
just wait till that Star Wars hotel opens and see what happens. I mean,
that'll be a $3,000 for a couple of nights experience probably. And that's when you just get a bunch of your friends, you all dress up in like stormtroopers and hang out for a night in a hotel and, you know,
yeah,
kiss that money goodbye, but have a great time.
Yeah. All right. We think we kind of covered that. So we're ready to move on to the show?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, let's go.
All right. So, like I said, you guys all wanted to hear early Main Street this week, and I left that ambiguous intentionally to kind of give us room to kind of maneuver the land. But let's set the scene for this, for whatever this mess of this new stuff is going to be, by talking about Main Street a little. So both Disneyland and Magic Kingdom's Main Streets were – everyone knows that they were based after Marceline, or Walt's memories of his time in Marceline when he was younger. But a lot of it actually was also based off of Harper Goff's childhood in Fort Collins, Colorado. In fact, if you go back and look at Fort Collins at the turn of the century, it looks a lot more like Main Street than Marceline's photos do. And I know it's blasphemy to some people, but if you compare the two, look at Fort Collins, you'll see some of the resemblance. But we're in a turn of the century kind of Midwestern town. You have all of those pieces of kind of the traveling through time, kind of that crossroad. You have horse-drawn cars. You have the electric cars. You have or the gas cars. You have gas lamps. You have electric lamps. You have, you know, different building styles to show you the kind of age through. You still have the horse tie posts on Main Street. It's all to give you that kind of a feel of okay, this is a place at a crossroads with itself. Then you have, you know, all the smells that hit you, from popcorn to the fresh baked goods. You have, you know, the sounds of the live music and the characters on the street who are some of the citizens dressed in fairly close garb. And, you know, but you have Main Street, which is building to the castle at you know, Cinderella Castle. And it's really, truly this great. It's probably one of the best park examples of forced perspective, where you have, you know, first floors that are, you know, 12 foot high, second floors that are 10 foot, third floors that are 8 foot, and everything in those, the props and the windows are all built to size to give you this, you know, it's a three-story building, but it's really not, and it's just to give you that perspective. So that's kind of where we find ourselves, is that turn of the century small town Midwest. But I wanted to kind of go around the table and talk about what are some of the earliest memories you guys have of Main Street. I know we all came to Main Street at different times, but you know, so let's just go around, starting with Courtney. What are some of your earliest memories?
Well, my earliest memories at Main Street and Walt Disney World, I was 14 the first time I came, and I came with my family. So I remember my little baby sister, who was just here visiting, was in a backpack on my dad's shoulders. And it was just, you know, we came from California, so I'm used to Disneyland's Main Street USA. So being able to just be there with them and see something that was very similar, but also very different at the same time. I just remember that being really exciting and interesting to me. And that's kind of my earliest memory.
I know we have this, Aileen and I, my wife and I had this memory of when we went to Disneyland, we were in our mid-20s for the first time. And so we called it Bizarro Disney World. You probably had a similar thing back in the other direction.
I still do, because I've only been a few times. So I still do. Every time I'm there, I'm like, what is happening?
And I know Courtney and I have been talking. At some point, she and I are going to get together and do a compare and contrast episode of here's the differences and here are the similarities. And
absolutely.
And we'll have a fun time with that. Yeah. Pete, what about you? What are some of your earliest memories on Main Street?
Here's the funny part. I don't have any. I swear to you. The weird thing about Main Street for me as a kid was I only went once as a kid, once, 1986 or 87. That was it. The next time I went was 1998. And the thing that I remembered most as a kid, I think wasn't on Main Street. I think it was in the castle, where there used to be an art store. Like there was basically like World of Disney art store, but they also sold like swords and treasure maps. And the treasure maps have like a very distinct smell to them, like a moldy smell to them. And that's really my first memory. So I was trying to think of, like, what do I remember about Main Street so much? And I draw a blank. I think I was too young. And then as I got older, it just went away, you know? So my memories of Main Street more are from the more present day. You know, just seeing all the different types of castle, you know, designs that I've sort of seen, you know, that most of us have seen, the birthday cake, the Stitch, you know, the Stitch disaster thing. the golden figures that were on it. You know, that's the thing that I remember the most, like going down Main Street, you know, and Disney World in particular. But one of my best Main Street moments was when I started paying more attention and I heard the singing coming out of the second floor, you know, for the singing lessons. And at that time, I just was unaware of that kind of stuff. And I remember hearing that and going, wait, what else is going on here? Mm-hmm. You know, and then I learned about the phone and all that other kind of stuff that you could do on Main Street. And it became more of an attraction than it ever really did before. But that wasn't until I was about 18, 19 years old where that interest really started getting piqued. So that was me. It was much later in life, and it was just hearing that singing lesson off to the side and being like, oh, when was it? They do more than just sell the same t-shirt in 14 different variations. And that's when it became more interesting for me, for, you know, personally.
And that's a good point. I think a lot of people, especially as kids, we weren't, okay, great, this is just a distraction until I can get to my ride. Like, I want to get to my ride. I don't want to care about this little place. And then as all of us got older, we started paying attention to those details as kind of some of those details started to disappear really from that land. You know, you start losing pieces of that as we get older. And I have the problem of I went so much when I was a child that it all mushes together. I start going, wait, was that when I was a kid? Was it, you know, one of my real distinct memories is, and we'll talk about later, is in the House of Magic. But that's one of the very few that I can pull from Main Street, even though I had gone 100 times before I was, you know, 15 years old. So, but Melissa, what about you?
I think I have the same problem. Like, I went a lot when I was younger, but I think Main Street just became the, you know, avenue to rush through to get to the castle or get to Fantasyland or whatever we were going to do. Also, my family tended to not spend a lot of time in Magic Kingdom, which is, I think, odd, you know, thinking about how everybody else kind of, that's like their one day ticket. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Maybe when I was like my first trip when I was 3, like we did Magic Kingdom, but I don't remember any of that. But like the older I got, like I remember doing Hollywood Studios a ton with my family. I remember Epcot a bunch, but I don't remember a lot from Magic Kingdom. But one of the funny memories I have at Magic Kingdom on Main Street was our very first trip, Pete, when we went with everybody. And this is like stuck in my mind. This is like the one like memory. I distinctly remember we were on the corner at Casey's. It was me, you, and Paul. And I was going to go over and get ice cream. And I was very polite. And I asked, God, do you want any ice cream? And you and Paul made fun of me because you thought I didn't want to go get ice cream. I was asking you guys to go get ice cream. You, like, you didn't think that I was like going to go unless you guys wanted ice cream. But I was just being nice because I was going to go get ice cream. And I want to know if you want to come.
What she fails to bring up, because that's always how these stories are told,
no,
is that happened repeatedly. Do you guys want a pretzel? Like, no, I don't want one. Nah, I don't want one either.
No. At that point, I was definitely I'm going to go get one.
And so at that, when you hear that a good solid dozen times, it's like, do you want ice cream? It's like, no, do you?
Yeah, I'm going to go get it.
Just go get ice cream. I'm like, it doesn't. It's fine. Just go. Like, I'm actually not going to get ice cream just so you don't get any.
So that's
as usual, half the story whenever she tells a story.
But yeah.
That's great. All right, so let's go ahead and do a kind of a tour of where we're going to be headed. So I picked a couple of places that I want to hit on. I don't want to go through Main Street line by line, because if we did that, we'd be here till next week.
Yeah.
It would just be a lot of me talking. I mean, yeah, and it would just be me talking a lot, and that's going to get boring for everyone.
I think, Ryan, I'm going to say, I think that everyone would love to hear all the little things. We can always revisit, like do a Main Street part 2 going down the line.
And I think we will. How I kind of set this was a 1971 park opening until roughly like the mid 80s. Like that's the era we're kind of looking at of stuff here.
All right, cool.
And we're going to look at the Walt Disney story, some of the shops like House of Magic, the Penny Arcade, the cinema, the Swan Boats, a couple of restaurants. So that's kind of where we're going to head through today. And then there's so much else we can pick up later, but that's kind of going to be our roadmap for this very narrow avenue today. But so let's start with the Walt Disney story, which actually sets us up really well. If you walk into the park and you make an immediate right, you see the theater today. You see where you can meet Mickey Mouse and all of that. And that building has actually been It's actually been several things over the years. It was originally named the Main Street Hotel. And if you think about the space, and we talked about this, that there's going to be a new theater back in that parking lot behind this area of the park and kind of adjacent to Tomorrowland. This was actually originally planned to, there were talks about it making it an actual hotel, and this would be your front desk area, and the hotel would have been right there. It would have been based off of a lot of those turn of the century kind of hotels.
Oh my gosh.
So that was the plan back then, and it never came to fruition. And we ended up moving to, it became the exhibition hall later, and then it would finally become the Town Square Theater, mm-hmm. which now makes it interesting with this new theater we're going to get, which is going to have a Broadway kind of production. You're looking at the possibility of three theaters on Main Street right now, and at least in name.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I thought I just saw somebody say something about they were going to take away Talking Mickey. So I wonder if they're going to take away like that quote unquote theater and make it something else. If they're maybe taking away that meet and greet area.
Also, it might just be a queue.
Does that build? I wonder what they're going to do.
I mean,
it'd be air conditioned. I mean, it's going to depend on where they set that new theater, which is, you know, again, moving to another area where Walt was. You know, this is going to be based off the Kansas City, the Willis Theater in Kansas City, when we get this new one. So we're kind of following Walt's, you know, life here. But I will be interested because the history of this building is kind of interesting. When you start looking at specifically that attraction, the Walt Disney Story, you would enter in basically through the gift shop, where the gift shop is after you meet Mickey now. You would kind of come in there and you would venture down a hallway that had props from Walt's life and all of this kind of stuff. Does any of this sound familiar to anyone?
Yeah. Oh, wow. See, I've never experienced this in my life. So this is great.
Yeah, and so you would see that, and you would come to a junction where there would be two 300 seat theaters and a mural, and I've tried to find an image of it, and I haven't found a great one yet. But there were 170 characters painted on this mural, and it was done by Bill Justice, which we've talked about Bill Justice from Peter Pan, Alice in Wonderland, Three Caballeros. He did a lot, but he painted that mural, and then you would go into this theater where there was a film about Walt Disney's life. It was about a 23 minute film, and it was actually narrated by Walt. They started in 69, and I've heard figures as high as 200 production members of Disney staff members were culling through thousands of hours of film in order to get a solid film and a solid narration by him. So this sounds a little bit like one man's dream, because now we don't really have the Walt film at the end of Walt Disney Presents over in the studios. But this was originally that spot.
That would be nice if they bring one man's dream. Like, if they're whatever they're doing over there, if they kind of bring this back to Main Street, that would be really nice.
And I think that also kind of shows that there's always an evolution sort of for this version, you know, for like a Walt attraction, you know, a Walt-centric attraction.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure that when the Walt Disney Story like left, I'm sure there's a lot of people who were very upset. And what they didn't know was that, you know, one man's dream would be coming down the line. So, you know, if one man's dream goes away, when it goes away, I have a feeling we'll just see a new incarnation of it, a different version. And I do think it would fit a lot better on Main Street.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. You know? And I think you create a hunger for it. You know, this ended in 1992 is when the attraction closed. And I think there was that hunger again for people like around the turn of the century, around his 100th birthday. Like, yes, we want to know more about him. So it came back, and we're, you know, tides ebb and flow. And eventually I would like to see it come back to Main Street.
Yeah.
You know, when you exited the theater, you had, in the early years, there was this hallway where there was this audio animatronic owl named Hoot Gibson, who would tell you the story of what was coming, future attractions to Disney World. At the time, it was the Western River Expedition. The whole piece, that the Thunder Mesa, all that stuff was going to be in Frontierland. And there was some models, there was artwork, and he was actually going to be a figure in the story. When you got to that attraction, that never came to be, which at some point we will talk about that. That is that's an undertaking unto itself.
That's a saga, right there.
Yes,
what it's a massive. I don't know. I feel like it's such a massively missed opportunity.
Yeah, and there's a lot of story there about what happened, who did what, who pushed where, and some of the hard feelings that came out after that. But then later they would retheme Hoot to talk about Epcot when Epcot was coming. Epcot Center was coming. You know, they tried to update the owl from a Western owl to like a, you know, hip, cool cat kind of an owl, and that didn't work. And so eventually that becomes, you know, Kodak takes over. It was originally the Golf Hospitality House, and then it would become the Kodak, and they would have all the old cameras that you could look at, and,
yeah.
and
that, I remember.
That kind of stuff. Yeah, and then you could go back there, and you'd have the photo op where you could go like do the carbon cuts of like 101 Dalmatians or all of those things, and they had some of the animated cartoon shorts in the theater, and like this changed. That was in the 90s once we lost the Walt Disney story. But yeah, Courtney, what do you think? Like, do you want to see like a Walt Disney story type attraction move back from the studios back to like a Main Street?
I think that that's where it belongs. I mean, if you're going to have a story about Walt, I don't think it belongs in a park that's, well, that park doesn't have an identity of its own right now. So yeah. I can't really say anything to that effect. But I think if you're going to have a Walt story, it definitely belongs on Main Street. That's where you feel the spirit of Walt. So it makes sense to have the story there for sure.
Yeah. Especially like at the front of Main Street, like before you like actually enter into like his whole, you know, area, like the what he envisioned.
Yeah, learn something and like, yeah, get into the spirit, get into Walt's spirit.
Yeah.
Yep. Better time, guys.
I remember when it was the Kodak Center, because I remember I bought film there because that was a thing that we used to have to do. That was also one of the last memories I have of like free roaming characters. Mm-hmm. And it was Geppetto, Pinocchio, and there was a third, and I can't remember who it was. It may have been Peter Pan.
Oh, really?
And they were just in the store, like just walking around. And I have a photo of it. I was just trying to find it. But that's one of the last times I ever remember seeing a free roaming character is right over there.
Well, and that's like the dichotomy you get between Disneyland and Disney World, because in that same spot, that's where you have the gallery where they have the free roaming characters at Disneyland. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense that they would be like that.
Yeah. Right, yeah. I can remember Captain Hook, actually. So that plays off of your Peter Pan piece. I can remember seeing Captain Hook kind of wandering through there.
Wow.
And seeing that kind of stuff. It's also, so if you go back and look through the old exhibits, that's actually one of the places I found one of, this goes back over a decade, I found a copy of one of the old Disney newspapers sitting like in one of the display booths for the Main Street Gazette, which is, that's one of the two places I saw it that gave me the inspiration to say, hey, you know what, that's what I'm going to call it. And there you are with the characters, or there are the characters.
It was dopey.
They both wear green. Peter Pan, Dopey, they both wear green.
They look exactly the same. Same difference.
They're very similar mannerisms there. Yeah.
A difference of ears, but that's about it.
So let's move on down. And so, they have the way that you set up when you come into Main Street is you have to turn that corner to see the castle. And that's what ends up happening. If you turn the corner, you see the castle, and everything else kind of disappears, and you forget what you're looking at the sides. But let's go over and kind of head over to the Penny Arcade, which is became the Athletics Club. Now it's part of the Emporium. Mm. But this was from 71 to 95. It was the place where you could get your fix for arcade games for turn of the century type things. You had the first penny press machine. It was actually, in fact, it was the only penny press machine in the Magic Kingdom when it opened. There you had movie machines, so it was either a mutoscope, which had no sound and a hand crank. Or you had the calioscope, which in the timeline were actually created 10 years later, but they auto ran. You didn't have to hand crank them. And then a lot of those machines, once that closed, either went up to the second floor of the railroad or over to Boardwalk. There are a couple that still live over there.
And
you had great names for these films like You Have No Bananas, Oh Teacher, and Captain's Kid Treasure.
Sure.
Like, you pick your choice.
I'm a little skeptical about
Oh Teacher. Yes. Yeah. Oh Teacher is kind of a little one. I'm like, really? Oh Teacher? Okay.
Yeah, that's weird.
It was 95 that stayed click until?
I just missed it.
I mean, obviously it was there when I first went, but man, that's something I would love to see come back. Obviously in a modern version, but maybe a retro part in the back, an arcade, an actual
in
arcade.
In Tomorrowland, maybe?
One would think.
I was saying, and you had like, for a while, it had a fortune telling machine, which didn't last long actually in Disney World, but it's still something. Correct me if I'm wrong, Courtney, but in Disneyland, they still have
they
the fortune telling.
It's still there.
Yeah, that was the one thing I noticed, like, with Disneyland was, like, the buildings on Main Street, like, they were a lot more segmented, which kind of sounds like how this one on in Walt Disney World used to be. I kind of missed that. Like, now seeing Walt Disney World, everything, like, the Emporium is just, like, this huge building that spans, like, five or six fronts. Like, yeah. I'd rather see, like, the little broken up stores, even if it's the same one store inside. Like, seeing the different facades on the outside was kind of cool.
And we're kind of getting that back now with the House of Magic making its return to its facade. So the way this was actually set up structurally, and we'll kind of briefly touch on all of them, you had the arcade, House of Magic, and the Tobacconist, which, yeah. And the arcade actually ran into the shops and then down behind the other two. So you had – it had more room behind it. It actually had the largest footprint. And then the Tobacconist – survived longer than you would expect. It made it to 85 before they shut it down.
Yes.
And then it became, and then they turned it from a tobacco shop to a stationery shop, and then to a bookstore, and then it rolled into the Emporium.
Very well, that kind of makes sense why it went away.
Yeah, now you're starting to understand why these things have become so homogenized because no one bought into it.
Right.
You know, no one ever really bought into it, but that's really a bummer. And that's the difference between a tourist park. And a locals park also.
Yeah. And so that's, and so you have the, so we talked about House of Magic, and this is one I remember vividly as a kid. And this was where they had tricks and cards and masks and Rindotti skulls and just all kinds of great gags that you could, like the joy buzzers and the, all those kinds of things. And the cast members would actually, and it had kind of a weird vibe to it. Almost, if you've been inside of Abracadabra, it almost had that kind of mystique, you know, like when you catch that at the right time, like at sunset, and it's kind of that dark wallpaper, had that kind of vibe to it. But I can remember seeing cast members doing tricks for folks there. Like they would come out and they would do their tricks, and that would kind of entice people to buy, or kids to like pester their parents to buy. And I know I had more than one gag or magic trick that I had gotten from there. And, you know, it has more of a storied history. The House of Magic actually has a more storied history over at Disneyland, considering who all has worked there through the years. But it was a place that we lost again in 1995. It did make it a decade longer than the Tobacconist. But
did it sort of get a replacement of sorts? I think it was in Downtown Disney. Wasn't it called House of Magic?
There was a magic shop there. It was Magic Masters?
Something like that. But it was there for a couple of years. I bought a bunch of stuff from them.
It was. It stayed there, and it was right next to the. Coincidentally, it was right next to a tobacco shop, a cigar shop.
Yep. Yes, so apparently,
apparently, you have to have that combination of places where you can buy pipes and, you know, Meerschaum pipes and Briarwood pipes, and you have to be able to buy some kind of tobacco when you're buying magic tricks. Apparently, that's the
that's the trick.
It's the magic tricks are like the gateway drug. There is what I understand that to be. So you lose those, all three of those in '95 to one of the original. They became actually. The Main Street Athletic Club. That was where you'd have all of the that's where you'd have all of like the golf shirts and the hats, and then eventually it still kind of has that vibe to it when you go in into those facades now, but it rolls up into the Emporium because we lose West Center Street, which was right there. So this is that thing that if you've been around Disney historians for any length of time, Disney World historians in particular, we bemoan the loss of West Center Street like there is no tomorrow. And I, part of me gets it and part of me goes, there are times where I'm like, why are we so upset about this? But that was from 71 to 84, kind of loses a little bit. And then in 2001, when the Emporium takes over the whole left side of Main Street, if you're looking at the castle, we lose it entirely. So what that included was a greenhouse flower shop, New England clock shop, a Hallmark card shop, the original Harmer Barber Shop before it moved up to the front of the park. It also had an exterior for a Chinese hand laundry, a library, and a Champion cyclery shop. Then you would have in the courtyard area there, you would have where now you see on the opposite side, you see like the silhouettes, and you have the Crystal Arts area. Yeah. On that side, it was all flower carts. It was all silk flower carts.
Oh, wow.
Just row after row after row of silk flower carts. And then we lose that in, like I said, in 2001. You know, I don't know, like, how much do you guys use the opposite side of the street, like the quiet area over there? You know, that I know, Pete, you said that's where you heard the audio.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, just hearing, like, how much we've lost, because I do see it as a loss. because one big shop is not very enticing. And I like walking down Main Street. I do. But it was also because I had nothing to compare it to. Mm-hmm. And now that I have something to compare it to with the recent visit to Disneyland, it just feels very shallow. Like, there's just not a lot really to engage with. There's a lot to do, a lot to see, but it's not particularly engaging, I don't think.
It doesn't have
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, like, it doesn't have, like, that same character that Disneyland has. It's, like, just looks like storefronts as opposed to, like, that turn-of-the-century storefront that, like, Disneyland still kept.
And then, you know, Ryan, going towards what you were saying, you know, yeah, I go to that little corner over there because I think that still retains that sort of character. Like, that's a little good. That's a nice little piece of it.
Yeah.
I just wish it was more prevalent, you know, going up and down. Now that I think of it, it doesn't seem to really happen at all on the left side of the street until I'm buying a corn dog. Then everything's fine. but the right side of the street still seems to have a little bit of that, you know, because you get the hat shop and all that, and that's great. And then, you know, you get the singing lessons and all that kind of good stuff.
And I even like the facade of, like, the bakery, you know, even though they made it into, like, the Starbucks, it still has, like, a unique feel to it.
Yeah, until I walk in, I don't really think of it. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's a Starbucks, you know.
They have one of the Sorcerer's portals over there, too, now. So if people wouldn't go in there, at least, you know, if you're playing that game, it does draw you in there, too. Mm-hmm. So that's a nice addition, I think, to Main Street and to getting you to notice a little bit more.
Yeah. That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, you also have those, so that there's actually theater exit doors over there as well. Like, you see, like, there's all those doors over there that used to be part of the Walt Disney Story that are now just there. You see doors, great doors, hi, nice to meet you. but yeah, there's a little bit of charm to have that. One, you have two, it almost looks like you're going through two blocks. Mm. You have to travel a little bit further up the street. There's a little bit more to see. I do like that they added the Sorcerer's Portal to get people in there. Same way with the one that's under Main Street, that under the train station there, that you have to actually go into there, and, like, maybe you notice the plaques on the side that have all the details about the trains and you know, it really is wonderful. But so now we'll move on to our first real attraction that required a ticket, because the Walt Disney Story, that was actually a free attraction when it came to Disney World in 73. It was they wanted people to come see Walt's story, so that would work. But now we're gonna go to the cinema, which we know now is the Art of Disney Shop, but they kept the facade fairly intact to what it was.
Yeah.
But that ran from 71 to 98. Mm. Originally, it was originally a B ticket. Like, it wasn't even an A ticket, like, because you wouldn't think people were going in there. It was a B ticket. They eventually moved it to an A ticket. But you had basically black and white Mickey Mouse animated shorts on running on a couple of screens in there, and there were seats where you could sit down and watch these shorts that were all running at the same time. And they would even change back some of them to a sepia tone if it was an animated in color, because they wanted that black and white kind of, you know, old-fashioned feel to it. But one of my vivid memories is there used to be a mannequin that sat at the front of the shop in the ticket window.
Okay.
As you were going into the cinema, her name was Jennifer, and, like all cast members, she had a name tag on that said where she was from. Anyone want to take a guess? Her town?
Was she from Marceline?
Marceline. Oh, yep. Nice. They put her in from Marceline. So eventually that would become a preview place for some film. Like, I can remember Toy Story 2 being previewed in there. They had, like, you know, coming attractions showing. Then it becomes Virtual Magic Kingdom headquarters for all of us who remember that game.
Nope.
That was I don't remember that at all. What the hell is that?
Nope. Virtual Magic Kingdom was the online game where you got to, like, you would travel around the Magic Kingdom and, like, completing missions.
Oh, no, I do remember that. It never worked.
Yeah. No, you had your own avatar that you would create, based off of their things. And then that was what happened. Like, that was the place, that was the hub there where you could go and get, like, you know, because you would go and check in, you would get, like, special prizes inside the game or what have you. It was clearly very popular. They shut it down, and then it stuck around for a couple of years after. Like, they just said, hey, we're going to close this, and then just kind of sat there, and people just kept, you know, slowly but surely leaving it alone because they weren't adding anything to it.
Like
Lilo and Stitch. And then it turned into Art of Disney, where now they still have that one screen in the back, which plays some cartoons in the background. So they've kept kind of that feel alive.
Yeah, I like that.
They do, but then again, like, I hate doing this, but like I remember walking down, you know, Disneyland, and I'm like, oh, it's a closed curtain, and it's like an actual thing.
Yeah.
But that Art of Disney store is really nice. I mean, it's a good Art of Disney store. Not the best.
Yeah, and it's small. I guess it's a small one for it, too. It's a nice little nook kind of that for that. Yeah. But yeah, the old theater had actually, it had like the metal, I'm gonna try to describe it. It's metal turnstiles that they didn't roll like top over bottom. Like they didn't roll that way. They rolled left to right. Like it was an old timey kind of turnstile.
I know what you're talking
about, almost like a cattle fence kind of a thing. Like it rolled that way. Mm-hmm. And that was how you would get in. And it was much darker because they didn't have access to the shops on either side of it. And then it had your curtain, like you talked about, for the little pieces. And then, so let's go to something that is really storied lore in Disney history, which is the Swan Boats. Yeah. And yeah, none of us really, these ran until 1983. So none of us ever really saw these live.
Nope.
But even people who went, I've had a hard time finding people who actually have ever seen these. And part of that was because they had a guidance system that did not work. So the fix for it was to put two jets on there, one at the front, one at the back, which gave you ships running ashore, ships bumping into bridge pillars, and ships spinning in circles.
That's great. I should ask my aunt because I know they were there like in the early 70s.
Right, and it would run in the summers. Like, it only ran the summers. Like, well, once they realized they had a problem on their hands, it ran at peak times. It kind of reminds me of, it could have been, you know, Disney World's, the storybook canal boats.
That's what I was just thinking of. Like, if you actually tailored the experience a little more, it could have turned into something. I don't know. I guess you can't anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Where were they run?
Yeah. Where exactly were they located? Like what 20,000 Leagues would eventually become?
No. So this is where it gets interesting because this is on Main Street. So you have that waterway around the hub, you know, that little circle where you walk over all the bridges. So the original dock was the seating area below the Plaza restaurant.
Okay.
So if you're going and you make a left, like you're going to go to Tomorrowland, you see that seating area below the Plaza restaurant that's now viewing for fireworks and things like that. That was the original spot because the dock wasn't completed when these opened in 73. Right. It took until 73 to get the dock open.
Or cool planning, that. Guys.
No.
And then they put the dock there. They put a temporary dock there. The real dock was, if you kept going on to the middle of the hub and then made a turn like you're going to Tomorrowland, there was the Rose Garden on your left-hand side down to what became the smoking area. Mm-hmm. That smoking area was the dock when it finally opened, or when that dock opened.
So it would just go on like the Tomorrowland side?
It would, no. So what it would do is it would go down and around under Main Street, cut by the Crystal Palace, go into Adventureland, around the treehouse, cut back out, and then cut around the front of the castle, and then back to its starting spot.
And their plan was to have people control this?
Right.
That's terrible.
One person controlling this and trying to tell, you know, talk to them about, like, whatever they're trying to talk to them about. And they were gorgeous boats. You know, they had a swan on the front, and they were more like pontoon on the sides with seating, almost like the Jungle Cruise, interior of the Jungle Cruise boats.
Okay.
But yeah, that was the plan.
It's terrible.
With the jet on the front and the jet in the back.
Yeah,
jet on the front, one jet on the back. Like,
it
not
sounds
even
like such a nice idea, but it's just executed so dumb.
Yeah.
They
couldn't even run when there was like severe weather, right? Like when there was heavy rains, they shut it down even then too, didn't they?
Right, because you couldn't, because the turns, people were getting soaking wet, people didn't want to get on them.
Right.
You also had, if it was winds, it was pushing the boats into wherever it wanted to push the boats. They end up converting one to clean the actual canal. They actually turned one into like basically a vacuum boat, so it could clean the canal boats.
The swan's head would go down into the lake and suck up all the dirt.
Right.
Perfect.
Right. And then it would, they were just, you know, like I said, they would run ashore, you know, even though it was natural gas, so it wasn't putting out a ton of, you know, fumes that were killing guests walking around above you. You know, again, I can't find a lot of people who actually did this attraction because you know, I found one video online and it just looks like you can't hear the person over the jets in the engine. You know, you're just kind of touring through the undersides of bridges. there's such potential. You know, I'd love to see that kind of an attraction come back to the Magic Kingdom, but in a better way. What do you guys think?
Well, did they take away a lot of the waterways just with the
hub
expansion? Yeah, everything. Much, yeah. Like, you'd have to like deconstruct the hub that they just built in order to do that.
Which... But put that aside. You know, would you want something like that?
I mean, it would be cool because there is all that water by the castle. It would be cool, like, if you could actually go, you know, and do like a little thing around it. Yeah, I'd be down for that.
So what I want to do is kind of combine the two. I want or two attractions from Disneyland. I want to take the idea of the storybook canal boats and then the Sleeping Beauty kind of walkthrough and make it like a Cinderella like boat attraction.
That would be cool.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
I'll go for it.
That sounds like something we could do.
I was sort of curious, like, do you know how wide the canal was? Like, because I'm thinking, like, okay, if one boat gets stuck, does every boat get stuck? Or was it wide enough that they were able to get traffic around if they had an issue with a boat?
I would think, you know, I've never been able to find one. I would think if it ran aground, they might be able to get it around. But then you got to, you know, you have to consider how are they evacing guests and how did that look? I would think it'd be more 70s. Like
they just tell them jump in the water and then walk out.
Go for it. I would think it was probably more like Harambe. Like, oh, one truck stops, we all stop.
Oh, okay. Oh, Jesus. All right. Maybe I don't want that. I don't know.
I also wondered about the visuals of, you know, going around the Swiss treehouse. You would be able to see the boats from the Jungle Cruise, and you know, considering that early Walt Disney World was so big on the aesthetics and the this land is this land, this land is this land. How did that, you know, what did that look like to people? And did they really, you know, did they really, really think that was a great idea? But this was pushed by Card Walker, who was the president and CEO at the time. Like, he loved these boats. He wanted to see this happening. And, like, he was, like, diehard on this for a long time until they finally said, no, we're just going to stop this.
I just don't understand why they didn't use, like, they have so many boat attractions already between both Disneyland and Disney World. Like, why not just use the same, you know, system that you've used for all the other ones? Like,
Well, also, I mean, Ryan, towards what you were saying with, you know, if you, you know, seeing Adventureland and whatnot, to say that I don't really know if that would be that big of a deal with the Storybook Canal, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you do kind of go from like Agrabah, you know, to Beauty and the Beast. So you're jumping a lot in that. I know it's all the fairy tale thing, but you jump around fairly well with setting, at least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone's okay with that slight little... You took a detour on the river. You know, maybe that would be a way to do it. Like, if you really wanted to be, like, story perfect about it, you reach a fork in the road, but you can never go to the left. You always have to go to the right. And that leads you through Tomorrowland. Or, even better would be if you had a fork in the road and it actually offered up two different experiences.
And I'm good with any of it. I was just, you know, to my mind, it I don't mind, but I think I wonder how that got through all the Imagineers who were like, no, we have to be this way. Like, it has to stay, you know, picture perfect.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even the fact of if you look at the rest of Main Street, you know, we had all the buildings that are forced perspective. So they're not quite sized correctly, except for going back to the Walt Disney story that the original hotel. That was built two stories flat out because they were trying to block the Contemporary. So it's like, you know, one of the streets fine, one of the streets not fine to have this kind of stuff.
And now we have monsters telling jokes in Tomorrowland.
Yeah.
Where they belong.
Ta-da!
No! We'll go to the Timekeeper at some point and I will raise Kane about that issue. Yes, that Timekeeper is right there.
I have a photo of him right here. Wow, that's weird.
Let's go sideways. Did you see that there's a Robin Williams documentary going to be out this year?
Oh, really?
They found a lot of archived footage from his family and from all these things. And yeah, it's coming out later this year.
You know what I always thought would be an incredible like treasure trove? And I don't know if they were doing the filming. If you guys have ever seen, like a lot of times when actors are doing voice work, they record it, you know, for their facial animations and this and that.
Yeah.
If there were ever enough that you could do a special, you know, sort of like when they had the in progress version of Beauty and the Beast, and they put it on the disc. If you could watch in a picture in picture, Robin Williams in the booth as you watch Aladdin,
that would be great.
I mean, do it with all the actors, you know, do whatever, however much you have footage of people in the booth. You sync that up with the clips that were used to the movie that's produced and blah, 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 blah. And you get to watch the man actually do his work as it's happening. Ooh, that would be really, really special. I think.
I think that'd be great. I'd rebuy Aladdin on whatever I needed to for that.
Yeah. Sorry.
All right.
Sidetracked.
I know. I set us off on that path. We're fine. Now back from Tomorrowland, back to Main Street. Let's talk a little bit about food.
Yes, please. Mm.
Food has always been integral to the Main Street experience. So Casey's Corner was the Coca-Cola refreshment corner at this time. It doesn't become Casey's till 95. It's basically the same menu. Like, it was always hot dogs. It was always hot dogs. One of the cool things is that. So if you go to Main Street now, you go under the Main Street Railroad Station, you have Station Break, which is where everyone rents, you know, well, it used to be where they rent strollers. Now it's like information and, you know, gift stuff, whatever. That was a snack shop. You could get, you know, little snacks, drinks, just little things to kind of tide you over for the first couple of years. But the main restaurant, which we all know as Tony's Town Square, which is such a wonderful place, was from 71 to 89. It was the Town Square Cafe.
Sounds nice.
So we're going to go through this. This is going to be fun. So it was, the sponsor was Oscar Mayer.
Sure.
Oh no.
And they actually had a mascot, Little Oscar, who was like supposed to be a chef. It was actually, George Mulkelson, was the guy who portrayed this, and he would go around and he would check with the guests. He's like, is everything good? He would hand out little weenie whistles to the kids. But so it gave you characters that weren't tied to Disney as mascots, like in the park. You had this, and you had the, I can't look at you right now because I saw you had the orange bird. You had the orange bird over in Adventureland, and you had those two. And even while the orange bird was created by Disney, this was totally outside of their purview.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But anyone want to guess what the menu was at the Town Square Cafe with Oscar Mayer?
Bologna sandwiches.
Bologna sandwiches. Yeah, right. I would hope. Right.
Bologna sandwiches.
It was seafood cocktail.
Oh.
It was Monte Cristos. It was mint juleps. It was salad Theodore, crepes, chopped steak, cheesecake, like. It was a real restaurant. Like, it was Oscar. You could get a hot dog, like, for kids and stuff like that, but it was, like, supposed to be a really nice. It had outdoor seating. Like, it had a nice little patio that's now been closed in. But it was a real nice dining experience when you first came into to Main Street for those first couple of years, like, before it got taken over by Tony and his, we'll call it
thugs.
Spaghetti.
Tony
real quick, though, what is Salad Theodore?
Oh, I'd have to go back. I did look it up because I was like, oh, what is that? It was...
I've never heard that in my life.
No, there were a lot of names on this thing that I was like...
Salad Theodore Huxtable.
He put the Jello in
it's kind of like Watergate salad.
Yeah.
That's a good
something
name.
With Jell-O.
So you had really popular foods from, like, you know, that wouldn't have been popular probably at the turn of the century. But would have been really popular to, you know, adults that had grown up in the 50s and 60s and that kind of thing. Which I found out going and visiting an independent living, kind of a retirement home for my mother-in-law last week. I found that there was menu items that there are things on those menu items that I thought had been long gone that apparently still live. Like Jell-O salad with cottage cheese in it. That was an experience.
Yuck.
See, but like that menu sounds great, but that name is so uninviting. Like, I wouldn't think that at all. I wonder if that was part of the reason that it didn't do good. Like, I don't know if the food was no good or if it was just like bad planning, you know? Like, hey, we've got this sponsorship, we got to use it. But, Jesus.
If Little Oscar is standing outside handing out weenie whistles, I'm definitely not going in there either.
Yeah, yeah. Also, don't hand out whistles to kids. Jesus.
Yeah, we experienced that on New Year's Eve. It was annoying.
Yeah, that's right. There's actually I have a tale to tell. Well, not for now. This is not time or the place. But you know those things that you spin,
mm-hmm.
those plastic things that you spin.
Yeah,
I was with some friends, and the short version is they were taken away from us at a mall, and then the guy who took them, who's security, claimed that they were gone, and my friend threatened, if we don't get our toys back, I will buy one for every child I see in this mall. I'll buy all of them and I'll hand them out to children, and then we'll see how annoying that sound is. So we actually got them back moments later.
Good. Yeah. I've seen the new ones for the new Fast and the Furious over at Universal.
What?
Yeah, they're gonna have them, and it's apparently just a little car on the stick that would spin around, but then it's like a plastic like map of a road that also spins around. You can't see it. It's like a skirt twirling at like 2,000 miles an hour with a little car that's going in the opposite direction. I don't even understand what I'm looking at when I watched it. I was like, sure, that's what we all need.
Into the sea.
I told you we should have gone to that store.
Yeah, we were in Universal recently, and we walked past that, and she's like, "Did you look in there yet?" I was like, "No," and I just continued going to Diagon Alley. That was it.
Just act like it doesn't exist.
Yeah, I was like, "No, I'm good. I know what this is."
The other joke that I thought that was really great this week, since we're on, you know, we made a left turn with Fast and the Furious, is there was the Santa Ana car accident where the car went into the second floor of the building. The great joke I've been seeing around is that, well, maybe the new Fast and Furious attraction isn't going to be screen based.
You only get test to do runs it in once. Santa Ana.
Yeah. Right.
You only get to ride it once. That's it.
So that's kind of our tour of Main Street. We'll go back to we'll go back from the future back to where we were in the turn of the century. That's kind of the big pieces I wanted to hit on with Main Street. But you know, what does everyone think? Is there any of these pieces that you'd love to see come back, even in a different form, you know, a more updated form? And if so, like, what pieces would you like to see? So, Melissa,
I would love to see the arcade come back. I like that idea. I like the idea that you can like actually do something rather than just have a bunch of shops, because like, yay, Main Streets are usually either places for restaurants or places for stores. But like every time I've gone to it, like any kind of Main Street on, you know, outside of Disney, like there is usually something where you can have the kids do stuff. So I think that would, well... Kids at heart, also.
Okay.
I think that would be like a fun thing for them to do, and like to have that piece where you are kind of meant to stay on Main Street a little bit.
What about you, Pete?
It's a dead tie between a magic shop and the. It's not a dead tie. It's a close contest between a magic shop, but with the arcade edging it out. I do think that an arcade, something as Melissa put it, I think you put it. Something to do. Something to keep me on Main Street a little bit. But I would love it to be a mix of the old and the new. You know, make it that at the front. How would you do that? No, make it at the front of the store. It's the oldest, you know, a couple of like really old school things. And as you go deeper into the store or whatever, I don't know if that's a store then at that point, into the arcade, is when you get to the more turn of the, you know, the more recent, the newer stuff. Also, then, if you're ever fixing stuff up, it's never affecting the front of the store. You're always rotating out and putting in some stuff near the back. Because I just recently went to a pinball thing for a whole weekend, and I had an absolute blast. And, that's an activity that I really miss. I miss having that activity. And I know that Disney would do a hell of a job with it. And obviously, you know, I know we're not talking about Tomorrowland, but... you know, with Tron coming in and Flynn's Arcade being a thing that you would think makes a lot of sense. Who knows? Maybe we'll get something like that. But at the top of my list would definitely be an arcade. But part of... I know I'm, like, picking everything, but, like, a decent restaurant wouldn't kill me either. You know, the food at Magic Kingdom's not great. It's fine. I mean, I don't care. The only place that I'm like, yeah, let's go, is Casey's. And that really shouldn't be my answer, you know.
I like Pecos Bill, but yeah.
Which one?
Pecos Bill.
A lot of people like Pecos Bill. It's not my favorite, but a lot of people love it. So
the Fixin's Bar.
Fixin's Bar is there.
That's all you need.
I don't know. Restaurant or arcade? Do I want to eat or want to play?
Both.
Arcade.
Play with your food.
I want to play with my food. I want to play pinball with a hamburger and a meatball.
Meatball.
Then, well, you know, they had that for a while. When some of the machines closed, some of them did get to Casey's for a very brief time. So you could have had your hot dog and played your arcade game or your pinball game.
That's all I want.
But what you can't have at Casey's is a real Main Street corn dog. Mm.
That is true.
That needs to happen.
You are 100% correct.
That's my first answer to this question, is there is a real Main Street freaking corn dog at Disney World. It's a problem, for real. My second answer is, you were just saying Flynn's Arcade. They had a pop-up Flynn's Arcade at California Adventure a couple years ago, and it was amazing when Tron came.
Cool.
Unrelated, but I just needed to say that. But I think along with what Ryan said, I would like to see them do an attraction. I don't know if they could do like a swan boat kind of attraction, but I'd like to see them do something that gives the castle a story that, you know, we're talking about the story of the castle, because that is so well done at Disneyland.
Yeah.
And Disneyland Paris, they have the dragon and, like, you know, you have those things in the castle everywhere, and it's not at Walt Disney World. So there needs to be something to, I mean, it is the focal point. So why can't we go in the castle in some way, even if it's under the castle, or, you know, they could just do, you know, fully enclosed. It could be a fully enclosed ride. It could be another dark ride. Mm-hmm. It could be a Cinderella dark ride. I mean, I don't really care what they do, but I just think there needs to be a story for the castle.
There is. You go up there and eat.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I was going to suggest
a lot of money.
Yeah.
I was going to suggest the Black Swan boat ride.
No.
Based on Darren Aronofsky's movie.
Yeah.
And
sure.
Yeah. Just watch that movie, and that's what happens, pretty much.
It's full of underfed women.
Yeah. Yes. And ballet. Yeah. And madness.
Well, yeah, that's the restaurant.
And Barbara.
I think that, you know, there is room, especially with, if you go into Fantasyland, you look at, you know, you have Sir Mickey's, you have the princess meet and greet. You have all these things where you could potentially use that space and tell an actual story.
Yeah.
You know, digging down, because the aquifer in Florida is so low, you can't get, and with the utilidors already there, it's kind of wonky to have to build under. But there should be some kind of story there, and I absolutely think there should be. Corn dogs are a massive issue.
Yeah.
I can remember I was in Disneyland a couple of years ago for a conference, and I was there with some coworkers. It was the first thing I made them do. I'm like, no, you don't understand. We're going to have dinner at the corn dogs. Like, they're like, we're going to have what? I'm like, just trust me on this.
Yeah.
And I was there for a little over a week, because I stayed in Aileen came out, and it was like, I walk in the main gates. I'm like, yep, corn dog. I was like, I can't get this at home. I want it now. Yeah. I can't get it at home.
Yeah.
But for me, it's House of Magic. Mm. I would love to see a real, You know, magic's been such a huge part of, you know, whether you're talking about film magic or you're talking about, you know, illusions of other things, or just magic in general. It's such a huge part of the Walt Disney story. I'd love to see that back there, giving a real true form, because I have plans for an arcade, but that's going to be when we get to another place, because there was an arcade, and I want to see that arcade again, because that was a cool arcade. It's not in Tomorrowland, although Flynn's is a wonderful idea.
Yes.
But so before we leave Tomorrowland, sure. Before we leave Main Street, any more questions before we kind of wrap this up this week?
No, I don't.
Pick my brain,
so.
make me, you know, put me on the spot so I can't answer a question.
Well, I mean, Ryan, I want to ask you the question. Well, sort of that you asked us, like, going forward with Main Street, do you want to see them try to, you know, bring back some of these things? I mean, like, in a realistic terms, you know, do you want sort of like an, you know, amalgamation? Is it like a combination, right? Mm-hmm. Of the past and, you know, what they kind of have to do from a business sense? You know, would you like to see that? I mean, what does Main Street right now mean to you over in Disney World?
You know, it's interesting to look at right now. There's still a lot of details on the outside to kind of hold my interest, whether it's the Osh Poshim, who's the proprietor of the Emporium, which we know from Summer Magic, as a character from Summer Magic.
Yeah.
The music in the window, the fact that the pavement is red because the grass is green and they're on opposite side of the color wheel and they want that spectrum. It's visually interesting to me. It's interesting that it makes me, you know, because of the force perspective, it looks shorter going in, and because of the full-size buildings at the railroad and at the end of at Town Square, it looks shorter going out when you're tired. You know, they've intentionally tricked you on that. There's interest there, but I want, you know, I love the land to be able to develop and really look at all the details and have a real world lived in thing, you know, more than just the little windows that are to all the Imagineers and all the designers. And I think we're going to get that once we get the new theater built. That's a whole new, another side of Main Street that they can play with. And if they do the right thing and they turn the Imagineers loose on that area, I think it can really add some character, some livability kind of factoring in to that land. And that's really what I want to see again.
All right, cool. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how they're going to put that theater and where they're putting it in, like how it fits in that whole area now and stuff. And like, I don't know. Yeah, Main Street, I think, needs a little freshen up. So I'm excited.
I think the theater is step one.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah, I do. And I think once that brings attention back to the land, I think you start, you know, everyone starts looking around going, oh, well, that could be better. Let's fix that. And that could look better. Let's fix that. You know, the days of individual shops, as much as I love that idea, you know, we still have it some with it, like we said, the Crystal Arts, the bakery, that whole right side of the street.
Yeah.
But I think the Emporium is a done deal, and we're never going to see them section that back out again.
Yeah, but on that note, I do think that we're sort of seeing the return of the single store, but it's more like Memento Mori, you know, is like a really good example of that. And that's something that was sorely lacking for a long time. And I think that they've noticed that people want attraction-specific stuff.
Yeah.
And I hope that that trend continues. It's kind of been a little bit of a dearth right now because they're building everything else in the world.
Yeah.
But I think that we'll see a return. I hope so. A more classic Main Street, because it definitely doesn't feel
like
a small town.
Yeah.
I think Move It, Shake It is part of the problem
right
now, because it just goes right up Main Street, goes around the hub, they stop and all the kids dance to whatever song they pick, and then it goes right back out. And to me, it does not fit at all. Nope. And I always see it six times when I'm there.
Nope.
And I mean, this is partially who I am as an individual, but I prefer Dapper Dan's. I prefer, you know, those shows that you get in the morning, you know.
Yeah, the trolley.
The trolley, yeah, I prefer show, all that stuff. That feels like Main Street.
Yes.
And I think once they put something, they can replace Move It, Shake It with something else.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have, you know, Shakira bumping up and down Main Street,
it absolutely hate it. At all.
Yeah, it's worse than the Christmas music.
I hate sound like an old man, but I legitimately hate that parade.
Me too, I do too.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, one of the things that there's always a charm, I think, short of, you know, Hollywood Boulevard and its neon, Main Street had more charm than at night than any other place kind of in the parks. And but part of that to me is always the nighttime parade, like that, having that nighttime. And we're at almost a year and a half now with no nighttime parade. And I really would love to see something finally come back. Yeah. Get rid of Move It, Shake It. The Sound Station, not Sound Station, that's in Disneyland. But the afternoon parade is a fantastic parade.
I finally saw it.
Festival of Fantasy. Thank you. Yeah. It you know, that's a great parade. You do that once, you do a nighttime parade once, you have your fireworks. Like, you know, I want those more classic Main Street experiences. But the Dapper Dance, the interaction with all of the Streetmosphere, which you keep getting, you know, called back a little by a little by a little. You know, you keep losing here or there. You know, Scoop Sanderson went away a couple of years ago. You know, I don't know what the plan is now with Mayor Weaver. Just, you know, kind of building that back in. I'd love to see some more of those kinds of things. But I do. I think it's going to be, you know, a little bit of time before we see all that. And, you know, going back to the shops, I think we are going to see that a little bit more, hopefully, of those area-specific things. Like we're seeing now with Pandora, you know, nothing that you can get in Pandora can you get anywhere else. Star Wars is going to be the same way. I'm starting to suspect Toy Story may have a similar element. Even though you can get some Woody Buzz stuff everywhere else, there may be things there that you can't get anywhere else, unless you're using the Shop Disney app. But otherwise, I'd like to see, just give it a little bit more of uniqueness again. Even if it's, you know, everything in the park in Emporium, give it something that's unique to there.
Well, I think you kind of hit it on the head, because you were always talking about Main Street as like its own land. And I think so many people don't see it as a land. Like, they see it as like the gateway to get from the entrance to the castle. Like, it's not thought of as its own land anymore. So I feel like if you brought that back and like made it its own land and character, like that would really be the thing that brings that, you know, unique and charm back to to Main Street.
Because I don't think that that's the fault of the guest for thinking that it's just a walkway.
No, it's what it's been made.
I mean, hell, when it gets too busy, we're brought around Main Street.
Yeah, or like, after you're going to the parties. We're just diverted
straight off Main Street because we got to get our badge to go to the party.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, man, that just robs so much. But another, you know, just a small note on, you know, we also could really use a nighttime parade to give people something else to do, to maybe lighten up the wait times on the attractions.
Yeah. Right.
You know, stuff like that is how you divert, you know, how you, you know, diversify and break up crowds. Mm-hmm. And not having that right now, I think, is making nighttime attraction riding even more difficult. And that's why, you know, one of the things I do really enjoy about the Fast Pass system that we currently have is I can plan a night at Magic Kingdom.
Yeah,
and I'll be okay. Mm. Like, I can plan 3-4 hours of my day, you know, between, you know, the three fast passes, and be able to get something out of that day, because otherwise, you just, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, they got to bring a nighttime parade back. That's actually one of my first memories of Main Street. I didn't even think of that because it's been so out of my periphery. But, like, I remember watching the electric parade and seeing, like, that crazy turtle and the clowns on the ball. Like, those were definitely in my memory. And we need something back. Nighttime here.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll see something at some point. They'll at least make an announcement at some point that we're going to get something again. But you know, even if, you know, even make character specific stopping points around, you know, like you have Mary Poppins on Main Street, you know, you can find Mary Poppins on Main Street, or you know, you're going to be able to find, you know, if you look at some of the vintage 1970s kind of artwork, there's a great picture of like Minnie in almost like the dresses you see the Street and Sphere characters in now, or in Mickey in like the, you know, like the flat hat with like the ribbon around it and like the stripe, almost like a Dapper. Almost like a Dapper Dan suit, you know, but they've never been characters. Those have never been walk-around characters. That's just in all the marketing for Main Street back then.
Yeah,
put them in those outfits and let them have a photo op and you know, instead of the theater, let them be someplace else in the land.
Yeah.
You know. Give people a reason to want to be there, and then let them explore the rest, and then they'll find the rest of it while they're trying to kill time for some of that stuff.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right, are we all good?
I think
it's good. Yeah. I think it's a good first step into a much bigger world, honestly. Yeah, that was great.
Are we going to venture to Winnie the Pooh? Is that where we're going?
I think so. I think we're going to go visit the old Pooh Bear, himself.
Nice.
We're going to watch and review the original 1977. Am I correct in that number? I might be right in that number.
It's 76, 77. It's somewhere in there.
Yeah. The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. We are going to do our, you know, our deep dive into the history of the film, the cast, and then discuss the film and, you know, ask our three questions, which I always love to forget. But I know two of them are, what is the iconic shot and does the film hold up? The third question is, does it have a moral and does it succeed in trying to get that moral across to the audience? You know, does it do it in an effective way? So that's what we're going to throw towards one of the most forever Disney characters now, you know, that you can think of, and that's the Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. It's strange to think that this only started in the 70s.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like a much bigger piece of the Disney history. I mean, granted, we were still talking about like almost 50 years, 40 years. But, you know, that's it's a big thing to look into.
Well, some of it goes back even further than that.
That's true, because it was on...
Because of the shorts, and then they got combined for the... Yeah.
Right.
You're right.
We'll get into that next week.
Yeah, that's what we're going to get into. And then we're going to talk about, you know, what's up with that movie? Does it still work? Does it still deliver? And that we're going to talk about. And then whatever insanity comes forth over the next couple of days in the Disney news realm. And where, you know, we've got a lot of stuff coming up, man. It's going to be a really busy year for movies. We're going to be talking about the parks a lot more.
Yeah.
Me and Melissa are going to be checking out more of... You know what? Next week, we're also going to have a bigger report on the Festival of the Arts.
No, we'll save that for the...
Yeah, we're going to do that the week after when we come back to the theme parks. We're going to do like a half Festival of the Arts, half something else that I have yet to come up with yet.
Okay.
And that'll give us a couple more weekends there, too, because it's only on the weekends, so it's good to get a couple more under
the belt. Also, somewhere over the next couple of weeks, KJ is going to be coming back.
Yeah.
On the show. We're just figuring out our schedules and stuff. He's a very busy man. Mm-hmm. And yes, we got a lot coming up, guys. There's going to be a lot of stuff coming up over the next couple of months, over the whole year, quite honestly. So, awesome.
All right. Well, then with that, Until next week, this episode of Disney Magic Hour has been brought to you by MEI Travel. For all your vacation planning needs, for visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, traveling anywhere around the globe, visit the experts over at meitravel.com, where Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. Right now, you are listening to There You Are. You can find this track and more over at soundcloud.com/pogomix. His website is pogomix.net. We are Last Gen Podcast. Find us on Twitter at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, we are Disney Magic Hour. Add yourself to the group. If you're already in there, add your friends. You can listen to this show on or share with your friends from iTunes, Google Play Music, or Stitcher. And Melissa, tell us where everyone can find us on Instagram and Patreon.
Instagram is at Disney Magic Hour Podcast, and Patreon is patreon.com/Disney Magic Hour. You can find ways to help support the show.
All right. With that, say goodnight, Courtney.
Good night, Courtney.
Say goodnight, Pete.
Good night, Pete.
Say goodnight, Melissa.
Good night, Melissa.
Good night, Ryan. And say goodnight, Pogo. I just found the keys to a city that beats a baby.